Session number 13123, Cyril Mount.
Real 14. We're talking about the VE Day celebrations in Liverpool, which you were on leave when VE Day came. How did you feel yourself about the end of the war? I mean, you'd started it as a trumpeter sort of thing, and you finished it as an officer.
Yeah.
What did you think that the end of the war would bring to you?
I didn't know what was going to happen to me. I did know that I wanted to learn more about art and more about painting. I mean, I don't think I'd ever used the word art, but I gradually got the notion that there were such things as art schools where you could go and be paid to go there, you know, government schemes and so on. That was already, I was already aware of that possibility. So I think that was what I had in mind, yes, the thought of learning how to draw and paint properly.
Now, where did you go after your leave finished? Back to Dortmund?
Back to Dortmund, and then I was shunted off to military government.
Now, what was that?
Now, that, again, is a blank memory. I don't even know where the bloody town was that I went to, quite honestly.
What were you doing, roughly?
I had a Jeep of my own. I was driving... Oh, God. It didn't last more than 2 or 3 weeks. This is another thing. I don't know what I was doing, quite honestly. I really do not know. I was in an office sometimes checking... We had a German interpreter. We'd go out and talk to people, burgomasters of this... town or officials. I think we were trying to get some sort of order re-established. I think we were trying to find people who could be... Yeah, this is it's coming back now. Find people who could be trusted to be policemen and take over from our red caps, because it was our own military police who were keeping some sort of order. Although the Germans, they didn't seem to need much keeping in order. There's no... they're very docile people. They were absolutely shattered in that particular part, and very docile and very anxious to please. And again, you know, there was this no fraternization thing, but which people were ignoring. There were a lot of officers in this military government, and everyone already had a mistress, a beautiful young 16, 17, 18 year old mistress who was thriving on the chocolate and coffee and whatever they was able to offer them.
What's the next thing you remember?
The next thing was I wanted to get back into a unit again. I didn't want the idea of being a military governor, a MilGov officer. You know, it seemed like a stigma. And it was more especially a stigma because I'd been posted there from this unit who obviously didn't want me. I was a ranker as well. There's another thing. See, I don't think they were rankers, those people. They'd been in the territorial mob. They'd been officers in the TA. And a lot of them had been officers in the OTC at public school or university. So I was very much an outsider. And I was posted to this mob, and I can't remember the name of this mob either, up in the hills, in a place called Berleburg, near to... The bigger town was Winterberg, which was notorious for being a ski resort, which was also a strength through joy camp. There was an enormous hotel with hundreds of rooms on the side of the hill, like a huge liner, where the young women came to be fertilized by the cream of the German army. And that had happened, and we spoke to several waiters and people still there who remembered all this happening. We went there and we had 2 skiing holidays from this regiment. A very nice mob. I don't know who they were though. I can't remember the name of them. But I was sent... Oh, yes. I was sent for by the CO of the regiment, and he was also an ex-horse man. And he said, "You and I... Mount seem to be the only people who know anything about horses." And I don't know how he found out. Again, I must have been opening my mouth, but in the mess or something. We had a mess, which was the Bahnhof Hotel in this place, Berleburg. It was lovely. It had belonged to an SS officer who had looted masses and masses of champagne from France, and the cellar was full of French champagne and French brandy. So we didn't even need the nafty ration of gin and stuff. This was a lovely way to end the war, actually. It was really nice. I enjoyed this period. And so he said, what I want you to do, he said, we've sent for some saddles and bridles and rifle buckets and so on from wherever he'd sent to. And I want you to... The snow was very thick. This was what the problem was. It was about sort of 3 to 4 feet deep in that area. And even the jeeps weren't sort of performing well. So he said, our job is to search, patrol, and search all these farms in this area. It was a very, very hilly mountainous area. And I want a horse patrol to do this. Now, whether he was being, you know, also having a little bit of glory on his way out or not, I'll never know. But it seemed quite a good idea. So he said, I want you to go out and requisition as many horses as you can find that are rideable. And they'd already got two or three. So I went out with the adjutant, who had only just learned to ride anyway. And we were able to requisition horses. And there was another guy who came with an ex-jockey who insisted on riding like a jockey. So, you know, until I said, you put your legs down, straighten your toes up, boy. Between us, we got quite a few horses. Altogether, I think we got about 18 horses. And the gear came up, all these brand new saddles and bridles, and I got them polishing. Oh, and the at the top of the hill in this town, we were down by the railway in the railway hotel. At the top of the hill was a schloss, the most wonderful schloss, where was stored all the operatic costumes from the Recklinghausen Operatic Society, and the Baroness was still living there. And sort of loathed this, absolutely, you know, sort of bloody British troops in my town, sort of thing. You know. But we took over her stables, and there were marvellous stables for about 40 horses. God knows, you know, what they'd done in the old days, but it was a beautiful old schloss. There must have, you know, stabled every horse in the town there. But we took over these stables and the yard, and there's a two paddocks for riding school, and I had to knock these people, we had volunteers, I had to knock them into shape within about 2 or 3 weeks, to teach them to ride, or teach them to stay on and not fall off onto the peak of the riding school. And this was it was getting on for Christmas, it was November.
So you were there quite a while.
This was Christmas 45, yes. That's right.
So you've been there about 5 or 6 months.
Mm. Yeah. I was there for quite a long time, really. Just trying to remember that. I should have written all this down, tried to remember it, but when I leave here, I stop thinking about it. Anyway, I taught them to ride, and we went out and patrolled around these farms with rifles in their buckets and playing cowboys down these mountain paths and through the pine trees, and it was quite nice. And then other officers wanted to learn to ride, so I became sort of chief riding instructor, and that seemed to be my job. And you know, that, and getting drunk at night in the mess, because every night, every day, somebody was being demobbed. It had gone Christmas. Oh, Christmas time, I helped this sergeant to organise a pantomime, we borrowed these costumes. Amazing ballroom costumes and braziers with half turnips in each cup, you know. So we must have had over 20 lads and then at the equal number of partners for the ball scene in this. It was called Charlie Cinders and the God Sergeant Major. It was a complete piss take of Cinderella. So, yeah. So we had everybody who could do anything, tell a joke or show his bum or play a guitar or whatever. And it was amazing. We'd taken over this small theatre in the town, which was like a beer house and stage. And after the whole regiment had seen this show, we let the civilian population come in and see it. It was all very nice, because I remember the Naffy, this colonel, who was a really great guy, and I can't remember his name, he'd sent down for real barley and hops and whatever else is needed. And the local brewery, who had nothing like that to brew with, I think they'd been brewing with turnips or something, anyway, they were absolutely delighted, and they started brewing lager again for us. So we had the lager type beer, you know. So we had our whack, they were selling the stuff to the civilians, and they were delighted. So when this pantomime occurred, everybody had real foaming beer on the tables, and the Germans enjoyed it. They sang along with the whole thing, because it was a sort of semi-musical thing. I enjoyed doing that too.
What part did you play?
I was in it, actually, with a... I can't think what the hell was I? I wasn't an ugly sister, no. I was a male in uniform. I was taking the mickey out of... Now, why can't I remember this? I had a photograph of me on the stage once. That's gone.
And you just showed this to the population in your own regiment. You didn't tour it with any other...
We didn't tour it. Oh, my God, no. I don't think it was that good. But it was nice. I think most of the population of the town saw it. It ran for about a fortnight.
What about these patrols? Did anybody actually ever find anything?
What we found, by the way, we were very near to the American zone at that point, in these mountains, and we found black deserters living very comfortably with jeeps full of rations, K-rations and corned beef and stuff, and hidden in the yard, you know, covered over with straw and stuff, and living very comfortably with the daughter of the farmer. So we had to sort of round them up and send them back to...
Was there any trouble?
Well, they were a bit bolshy, yeah, but they, no, they didn't try anything on with about a dozen fierce-looking people on horses who came with rifles in their scabbards. And we confiscated shotguns galore, which was a bit mean, because the poor farmer, you know, was probably depending on the shotgun for the old rabbit.
Did you actually find anything else? Any German
troops? Oh, we found some of our own people. Oh, sorry, yeah, we found a few British deserters. And Germans, yes, sorry. It was quite an area for... where people had obviously run to lie low. The thing I enjoyed most about that period was the riding. And I had the most magnificent horse. I've got a photograph of myself in front on this horse, really beautiful 17 hands horse, which chestnut, which was an absolute dream of a ride. You know, I was really sorry to leave. And then came the spring, and...
Was there any much involvement in the black market amongst the unit, or amongst yourself?
Well, again, the fraternisation ban was still on, and yet everybody had a mistress of some sort. Or the lads had several, you know. The only people in the town were sort of either kids under the age of 14 and old, over 60s, over 70s maybe. No, over 60s anyway. I don't think they needed the corned beef and chocolate and coffee. The girls were quite eager to sort of fraternise, and the lads fraternised. And there was a refugee camp lower down. I'm not sure if it was in the American zone or not, but there were all sorts of people in there, including one British woman who'd been married to a German officer with her mother and her baby, and there were Hungarians and God, just about every nationality was in this camp. I don't know how they got there, where they'd come from, but we were allowed to invite these women, they were mostly women, that's right, into the mess as guests. And officially we weren't supposed to talk to the Germans, and we officially were supposed to deal severely with any of the lads we saw talking to German women, but everybody turned a blind eye to it by then.
Was there any sort of money-making black market as opposed to...
The I think I may have been quite naive, but I think the only sort of money making was people getting coffee, masses of coffee being sent out or brought back from leave, and selling it to the Germans at incredible prices. But I think there are other things, or swapping it for jewellery and watches and things. I found that quite, I mean, I'm sounding very moral now, but I found it quite sort of distasteful in a way. Although we did, when we got there, when the winter started coming, we found a factory that had been making cheap little electric one-bar fires, you know, 1 kilowatt fires, and we just requisitioned dozens of these for the mess, just took them, and didn't give them anything because there were so many anyway. And, of course, we were overloading the whole system, and it's a wonder the place didn't catch fire because people were putting great thick lumps of fencing wire in the fuse boxes because they were getting red hot. And it's just amazing that the wiring must have been very good, otherwise it would have caught fire. Because everybody had a little fire in their room and they weren't supposed to. It was like a hotel. It was supposed to be central heating working, but it never worked.
Now, what about demobilisation? Were you looking forward to it yourself?
By then, yes, I was wanting to get out and get do what I wanted to do. And get
this is the art.
Yeah. It's funny, even there I didn't do much. Oh, I've missed one bit. Sorry. I was, for one time, in this 143, they made me regimental education officer.
That was earlier.
That was earlier.
And well, let's just do that then.
I'll just mention this briefly because... And what I had to do is go around the town finding German plumbers, carpenters, all sorts of odds, who would be prepared to teach, with an interpreter, to teach groups of our lads, not a trade exactly, but teach them something in order to keep them occupied.
That would be in Dortmund.
Yeah, this is the big thing was finding something to keep them occupied before they were demobbed. Because even then, people started to be demobbed, the older ones who were in the lower number group, demob group. So I eventually then found this artist guy who had studied with a very famous German artist called Paul Klee. He'd been a friend and student of his, and I met this guy in a studio, a broken down studio, painting with a palette knife with oil paint, and he's painting a spray, this is in the spring, that's right, and a spray of those pink flowers that look like apple blossom, but they come out in March. And I was absolutely knocked out watching this guy painting on a piece of canvas with a palette knife. I'd never seen oil paint before, I'd never seen anybody painting before. And he showed me all his drawings, and I got him to teach a small group, which included myself, how to draw and paint, and he took us out, and I did do some drawings and watercolours at that point around Recklinghausen, and we were able to take some vehicles out.
So hang on, so this wasn't when you were at Dortmund, this was when you was this unit you can't remember the number of?
No, this was at with 143 at Dortmund. Yes, it was like I was given all sorts of odd jobs to do because they couldn't fit me in anywhere. I didn't belong.
This is late spring 45.
Yes.
Sorry, yeah.
So, but that came to an end, and that was when I was posted to the MilGov thing. It's all very confused.
It's all right, I can see it is quite vague. So, what about your demob then?
Then, well, along came my number eventually. Every night there's somebody going, or almost every night, every day rather. And then the night before was just an excuse for an enormous piss-up. And people would go off down the hill. The jeeps would sort of skid down. And the snow was packed tight on the roads. And they'd go slewing down the hill to the nearest railway station in the jeep. And everybody would lean out of the hotel window and fire whatever they had, you know, the 38s or even Bren guns. And even if the lads were being demobbed at the same time, they'd be going down in a 1500 weight with chains on. And they'd be firing Brens out of the window and rifles and tying bloody Christmas trees behind the vehicle. it was quite a a crazy sort of army. You know, it wasn't an army at all. It was amazing how we managed to sort of stay together as a unit, because there was no drill as such, as I remember, or parades, or I don't know how they did keep occupied. I know I was occupied with the horses, you know, with grooming and riding.
You seem to have fitted in a lot better with this unit.
I enjoyed that a lot. Yes, that was really great, because I think they had a certain respect for the fact A, I'd been in action, and B, I could handle horses.
So what about your own D-mob?
Oh, well, that came along, and I can't remember. I think I was very drunk. And I just...
That was in April 46.
Came round in... That was April 46. March 46, sorry. And came round in Manchester, queuing up for a suit. That's about the first thing I remember, really. And a suit and a trilby, which was so bloody ridiculous, I sort of dumped it. I got home. I had a fair amount of money by then, because I hadn't spent much on my officer's pay. And I think I bought... Oh, yes, I went down to a posh tailor's in Liverpool called Watson Prickard's and got myself a made-to-measure suit.
Now, you were in a strange position. You'd gone in as a ranker, and Now you'd come out as an officer. But yeah. Your social status could have collapsed quite quickly.
Oh, I'll tell you what happened. Is I was put in touch with... What was it called? The Ex-Officers Appointments Bureau. The ordinary lads had to just go to the labour exchange. But this was a place that had a number of jobs in reserve for officers being demobbed. I went to this place and they immediately gave me a job, hardly checked my credentials at all, gave me a job in charge of about 20 women in Dale Street in Liverpool, in a petrol coupon issuing place, and I was basically a civil servant, and I couldn't believe this. You know, so and I went home, and I they're all delighted. You know, oh, it's going to be respectable at last. You know, it's a very posh job. You know, sort of £10 a week or whatever. You know, I suddenly realised what I was letting myself in for. So I went down the next day and said, I don't want it. And I went to...
Why didn't you want it?
Because I wanted to go to art school. And so I went to wherever it was that somebody told me to apply for a grant to go to art school. I went up to the art school, that was it. And they put me on to the place to apply for a grant. I went to Liverpool art school, and I still had my drawings. I still had about 30-odd drawings. That I'd carted around faithfully from the... they'd been at home. I'd dumped them at home. So I took those. They were the only drawings I had. And they were quite thrilled with these drawings and watercolours, you know. And they said, yeah, we'll have you, sort of thing. I was delighted. I didn't think, you know, I was trembling. But, you know, later on I realised that the staff were absolutely in awe of all these ex-service people who had come back, you know. And we were in awe of them because to us they were like officers, you know, senior officers.
Were you able to get a grant then?
And I got a grant very easily, yeah. And that was it. And I just went to art school.
And
I got a leave and I went up the Lake District and I wandered around the Lake District on my own for about a fortnight with a rucksack, just doing drawings and...
And that was a Liverpool art school?
That was Liverpool College of Art, yeah.
And what did you do when you came out? Were you able to get a job?
Oh, we're leaving the army behind now, yeah. I applied for a job, applied for two or three jobs in Lancashire, for grammar school and...
as a teacher?
As a teacher of art. And I went up to one place in... Where was it? Somewhere in North Lancs. And it was such a grim school. One of the great big barrack things with the asphalt playground, you know. And I can't visualise slugging away here. So I turned it down. They offered me the job. And then I... this was 1950. I applied for this job in Northern Ireland. And I got a favourable reply. And the headmaster said he was coming over. And he met me in the Adelphi Hotel in Liverpool. And what he wanted, he couldn't care a shit about the art, but what he wanted was somebody to be in charge of the combined cadet force. in this public school. It was Dungannon Royal School, which was a boarding school. And he wanted a resident master as well. So I took the job. And on Fridays, I had to get my battle dress on. And put Royal Irish Fusiliers cockaded sort of navy blue beret on and clatter down the stairs with the lads, because it was the senior dormitory that I was in charge of, and all the CCF belonged to the senior dorm. And we'd all clatter down with our hobnailed boots. And I had the gardener of the school was an ex-Scots guard sergeant major, and he was marvellous. He had a spiky moustache, and he really bashed those buggers. And it was great. It was really great. You know, we used to go on schemes with the territorials up in the mountains of towards Londonderry, and we'd take the arse of the territorials, you know, in terms of just sheer efficiency and staying power and so on. Yeah, we'd be the enemy sometimes with the yellow bands on our hats, but it was great fun. I enjoyed that in a way, and yet I put my other hat on. I'd become a sensitive artist, you know, and teach art, and I did quite a successful job of teaching art there. And after 3 years, the inspector came round and said, "You're too good to be wasted here, and I'm putting you into a lectureship in Stranraer Training College in Belfast, if you'd like that." If I'd like it, you know. He was going to do it, you know. So he said, just a formality, old boy, and just apply, and the job's yours. Do you really want it? I thought, okay, yeah. So I went to Belfast.
What did you think the army had done for you then altogether, and your war experiences as a human? Sort of?
Well, I think what changed me was having been put down a lot, as a boy, as a trumpeter, treated as a sort of youngster, inferior, you know, and developed quite an inferiority complex. And also, because you're interested in reading and drawing, you know, there's the tendency amongst the course a lot to say, "Oh, you're fucking pufter," you know. He's not interested in the things we're interested in. But I could box. I told you about that. Yeah. So I was a contradiction in many ways. You know, if it got too rough, I could bloody a nose. You know. But I was always an unknown quantity. This art business. I mean, people generally, I think, are still suspicious of artists. They're weird people. You know, strange people. They don't conform. So I had that to put up with, and I think I had developed a sort of complex, you know, because I'm not normal, not the same as anybody else. And once I was selected, that was me. I mean, I think if there's one person I owe everything in my life to, it's that Major Carter at the transit camp in Tripoli for doing what he did for me. Because if it was just going through that 3 days at that selection board and coming out, watching these sergeant majors and sergeants, full sergeants, being rejected, and me, a lance jack, being sort of selected, I thought that did more for me than anything else. And I mean, okay, I don't think I handled myself as an officer very well the short time I was an officer, but I think it did so much for my confidence. And I went to art school, and of course nobody cared a shit then whether you were an officer or what you were. You know. Actually, there were a lot of us. There was a gang of us, six of us, three are now dead, three down, three to go, who were, and still are, incredibly close. Two were ex-Navy officers, and four of us were Army officers.
So the Army gave you the confidence?
I think I owe a lot to being in the Army, yeah.
Thank you very much.